In elegant blue script against a black background, Felicity Jones, J.J. Field, Kerry Mulligan, William Beck, Sylvester Latouzel, Desmond Barrett, Hugh O'Connor, Catherine Walker, and Liam Cunningham as Gerard Tilney. Northanger Abbey, screenplay by Andrew Davies, based on the novel by Jane Austen. In church, a parson stands at a stone font and baptizes a baby girl, then hands her back to her mother, father, and young family. The family walk away from the church across a meadow, and time elapses, shown by the family growing in number and age.
I baptize thee, Catherine, in the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Ghost.
No one who had ever seen Catherine Morland in her infancy would have supposed her born to be a heroine. Her situation in life, the character of her father and mother, and her own person and disposition were all equally against her. A family of 10 children, of course, will always be called a fine family, where there are heads and arms and legs enough for the number. But the Morlands were in general very plain, and Catherine, for many years of her life, as plain as any. Neither was it very wonderful that Catherine, who had by nature nothing heroic about her, should prefer cricket and baseball to dolls and books. But by the age of 15, appearances were mending. Catherine Morland was in training for a heroine.
Her parents watched the pretty 17-year-old.
Look, Aunt Catherine has turned out rather well.
Come on, Catherine, let's carry on.
Later.
She's quite a good-looking girl. She's almost pretty today.
In her long, white, lacy dress.
She's grown very fond of reading of late. I wonder if it can be good for her, my dear, to read quite so many novels.
Oh, why ever not? Now, what could be a more innocent or harmless pastime for a young girl than reading?
Catherine's reading under a tree hidden amongst tall grass.
Interrupted by a noise in the passage leading to the room. It approached. The door was unlocked. A man entered, forcibly dragging behind him a beautiful girl, her features bathed in tears and suffering the utmost distress.
Take her! Don't they know where? She'll never see her more.
Catherine imagines herself in the novel being thrust into the arms of a lascivious man. She swoons. Two siblings discover her.
Cathy? What are you doing?
Nothing. What do you want, anyway?
Mr. and Mrs. Allen are here. Mother says you have to come straight away.
The Morlands entertain the middle-aged couple.
No, said Dr. Mallison, no other place will do so well for a gouty constitution like Mr. Allen's.
No other place will do so well for...
Ooh! For squandering money.
Oh, fie, Mr. Allen. You know you'd love to see me happy. And thinking of that...
Catherine is young to go, but look, Mrs. Allen for protection. I see no danger in it.
She's a good girl. I think we can trust her.
Catherine walks into the drawing room.
Catherine, how you've grown. Quite the young lady, isn't she, Mr. Allen?
Mr. and Mrs. Allen come with an invitation, Catherine.
We would like you to accompany us to Bath for a time.
For when a young lady is to be a heroine, something must and will happen to throw adventure in her way.
Catherine's reading as she travels in a horse-drawn coach with the Allens. Mr. Allen's asleep.
A tumult of emotion stirred in the bosom of Adeline, and fear gripped her heart that at any moment ruffians would fly upon the carriage and return her to the ignominy of her captive state.
Catherine imagines three brigands on horseback. They shoot the driver and hold up the coach. Mr. Allen gazes out fearfully.
God, Mrs. Allen!
One attacker opens the door. Catherine gasps as Mr. Allen gets out to defend them with his sword, but he's slain from behind. Mrs. Allen witnesses it all from the doorway and faints. The handsome chief brigand pulls Catherine out of the coach. He strokes her cheek and fingers a gold cross pendant she's wearing. The carriage jolts Catherine back into reality. Mr. Allen wakes up.
Not long now.
Pink-cheeked, Catherine gives him a sweet smile. It's dark and flaming torches light their way as the Allen's coach draws up to a smart townhouse on a busy street in Bath. A manservant opens the door and helps them out.
Hoadley Street is not quite the smartest address, but for myself, I love to be at the centre of things.
So do I.
Two men eye her.
Drive not plucky.
Looking a little disconcerted, Catherine follows the Allens into their house. Later, she's looking out of the window.
So many people. I wonder who they can be and what their stories are.
Hardly worth knowing, I should say. If they choose to roam the streets, then they could be sitting at home by a good fire.
Oh, Mr. Allen is so droll. He always says the opposite of what he means, for he loves good company.
When shall we go into society, Mrs. Allen? I suppose it is too late this evening.
Bless you, my child. We neither of us have a stitch to wear.
I did bring my best frock, and my pink muslin is not too bad, I think.
No, 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 no. Would you have us laughed out of Bath?
Resign yourself, Catherine. Shops must be visited. Money must be spent. Do you think you could bear it?
Very easily, sir.
Day. Catherine and Mrs. Allen emerge from a shop, followed by two footmen and a maid carrying stacks of parcels. They get into the coach and their parcels are handed in. At home, a maid puts the finishing touches to Catherine's outfit.
Did you ever see anything prettier, Mr. Allen?
Other than yourself, do you mean, my dear?
Oh, fine, Mr. Allen. But Catherine...
Ah, she looks just as she should. Now, might we make our way, do you think? I entertain high hopes of our arriving at the rooms by midnight.
How he teases us, Catherine. Midnight, indeed.
This way, ladies.
Dressed in white muslin, the women follow Mr. Allen into the crowded assembly rooms and push through the throng. A young blonde man calls out to a friend.
Sedley! There you are. Is there anyone here?
Well, not a soul, John. There's no one here at all.
What could he mean?
If I might just...
Thank you. Excuse me.
Card room, I think.
Mr. Allen!
See you later, my love.
Come this way, Catherine.
Pardon me, miss.
An older man enjoys his brush with Catherine as they try to battle through to the ballroom. They approach it, but it's just too busy.
Perhaps we should go through to the tea room.
Catherine glances back as they head into the crowded tea rooms.
Quick, there are two places.
Mrs. Allen rushes Catherine over to the empty seats and sits fanning herself and trying to look calm. Their entrance has caused a bit of a stir. Catherine looks about uneasily.
How comfortable it is not to know anybody. Yes, my dear. Very uncomfortable indeed. Then you see, one can't speak to people unless one has been introduced. Will introduce us. I'm sure I've no idea.
Catherine notices John Thorpe, the young blonde man from the entranceway, looking over.
Had we not better go away? There are no tea things for us, and I think we are welcome here. Yes, it's most disagreeable. I wish we had a large acquaintance here. I wish we had any.
He and a blonde girl start laughing. Catherine jumps up. Trying to maintain a dignified smile, Mrs. Allen joins Catherine and they proceed out of the candlelit tea room. A handsome young brown-haired man hurries past them in the hall and clips Mrs. Allen's shoulder.
Oh, have a care, sir.
1,000 apologies, ma'am.
Catherine, do take this pin out of my sleeve. It was not your fault, sir.
Allow me. Oh.
Thank you kindly, sir. Though I'm afraid it's torn a hole already.
There. Nothing too disastrous, ma'am.
I shall be sorry if it has, for it's a favourite gown.
Really, Mrs. Allen, one would hardly notice.
No, it costs but 9 shillings a yard.
9 shillings? That is exactly what I should have guessed.
Do you understand muslins, sir?
I understand them very well. My sister has often entrusted me in the choice of a gown. I bought one for her only the other day. 5 shillings a yard and a true Indian muslin. What do you make of that?
Well, and I can never get Mr. Allen to tell one of my gowns from another. But tell me, sir, what do you think of Miss Morland's gown?
Miss Morland's gown? Miss Morland's gown is very pretty. Though I don't think it'll wash well. I'm afraid it will fray.
How can you be so...
presumptuous. Indeed, without so much as an introduction. You must allow me to make amends, Mrs. Allen.
He offers her his arm and leads them to a bench where 2 lads are sitting. He gives them a stern look and they clear off so the ladies can sit down.
Thank you. Very kind indeed.
One moment.
He walks off.
Very... really, I shouldn't have allowed you to speak to him as a stranger. But he had such an understanding, a muslin. I wonder where he's gone. Oh, here he comes again. And he's brought Mr. King with him, the master of ceremonies himself.
Mrs. Allen, Miss Morland, allow me to present to you Mr. Henry Tilney, just lately arrived in Bath.
Mrs. Allen, Miss Morland, delighted to make your acquaintance.
The ladies curtsy.
Now we may talk to one another.
We've already been talking.
You mustn't allow anyone to hear you say such things. We shall all be expelled from polite society. Let it be our secret. And now, if your card is not already full, Miss Morland, might I request the pleasure of the next dance with you?
With me?
Henry smiles broadly. Mrs. Allen nods.
Thank you.
Henry and Catherine are among other dancers who are lined up, boy, girl, in 2 facing rows in the ballroom. All the ladies are dressed in white dresses and long gloves, and the men in tight breeches and dark tailcoats. Each couple meets in the middle of the floor, holds hands and skips around elegantly, before circling in larger groups and then partnering up again. Mrs. Allen watches with a smile.
Forgive me. I have been very remiss in the proper attentions of a partner.
What are they?
Oh, I ask you how long you've been in Bath. Have you been to the theatre, concert and so on?
Wouldn't that be rather dull?
Of course. We must do our duty. You ready?
Yes.
How long have you been in Bath, madam?
Not long at all, sir.
Were you never here before?
Never, sir.
Indeed. And have you been to the play?
Not yet, sir.
Astonishing. Concert?
No.
Amazing. Now tell me, am I altogether pleased with Bath, madam?
Yes. I like it very well.
Excellent.
Henry gives her a nice smile. Catherine is enjoying herself.
Now I must give you one smirk, and then we can be rational again.
Mr. Allen catches sight of the dancing pair and inquires something of Mr. King, who whispers in his ear. Mr. Allen nods. Blonde John Thorpe wanders into the ballroom and spies pretty Catherine dancing with Henry. He weaves his way through the crowds and stares blatantly at her. Catherine notices him.
Not at all.
I wonder why he keeps looking at us.
I imagine he likes what he sees.
What? Do you mean me?
Why not?
Tall, brown-eyed Henry smiles winningly. Catherine curtsies and he leads her off the floor.
So tell me, what will you write in your journal tonight? Friday went to the lower rooms, wore my sprigged muslin dress with blue trimmings. Looked very pretty, though I see so myself. Danced with one man, was stared at by another, much more handsome.
Indeed, I shall say no such thing.
then what shall you say?
Perhaps I don't keep a journal at all.
Henry wryly cocks his head. She travels home in the Allens' coach.
Regal young man, was he not, Catherine?
Yes. He was very kind and very amusing. I liked him very much.
Well, Mr. Allen?
No, I didn't mean anything like that. He can't have thought of me like that. He's much too... He's quite grown up.
Catherine, I feel I should warn you that Bath attracts all manner of scoundrels and adventurers, and one cannot be too careful when making new acquaintances.
Mr. Tilney, a scoundrel. Mr. Tilney, an adventurer. He understands muslin, Mr. Allen. He has a sister.
Well, upon inquiries, I did discover that Mr. Tilney is a young man of very good family, and a clergyman to boot.
Clergyman?
Well, no doubt you prefer him to be a brigand. His father's a man of consequence, though. General Tilney of Northanger Abbey.
Northanger Abbey? Is it haunted?
No doubt, no doubt. These abbeys usually are.
Mrs. Allen rolls her eyes. Later, by candlelight, Catherine is sitting on her bed writing in her journal. She's wearing a white nightgown and her long dark curls hang around her shoulders. She smiles to herself as she scribbles, then blows on the book to dry the ink. Smiling again, she puts her book away and blows out the candle. Catherine and Henry flee from a Gothic ruin at night with a horseman after them. The horseman dismounts and takes off his mask. It's John. The men draw their swords and fight. Wearing a low-cut nightgown, Catherine staggers across to a tree and watches them with relish. She swoons ecstatically against the trunk, exposing her pale swan-like neck. Catherine and Mrs. Allen stroll.
Mrs. Allen? And this must be Miss Morland. Mrs. Thorpe, your brother James told me to look out for you.
You know James?
Indeed we do. He's up at Oxford with my son John.
Mrs. Thorpe, my old schoolfellow.
Yes, he went to you at Christmas.
And I may say he endeared himself to us all. Ah, here come my girls now. Isabella, my eldest, and Maria and Anne. Isabella, this is Mrs. Allen and Miss Catherine Morland, James's sister.
James's sister? How do you do, Miss Morland?
I've so long wished to meet you. Your brother has spoken of you so affectionately.
I am sure that we will be the very best of friends.
The two girls are in a bookshop.
I do love Mrs. Radcliffe novels too. I wish I were you. Just beginning to read Udolpho for the first time.
Is it really very horrid?
You can't even imagine. But I wouldn't tell you for the world. Well, perhaps one incident to whet your appetite.
Isabella whispers.
Can such things really happen?
Well, just think of Lord Byron.
I've heard that he is very wicked. But I don't know exactly what he is supposed to have done.
Catherine gasps as Isabella whispers some more.
And I have heard that he is here, in Bath. Should we go to the pump room and see if we can see him? Perhaps your Mr. Tilney will be there too.
He's not my Mr. Tilney, Isabella. Indeed, you mustn't say he is.
Isn't he? Well, there's a certain person who will be very glad to hear that.
Who do you mean?
Never you mind. I do so hate it when strangers listen to one's private conversations.
Two young men have been spying on them. The girls link arms and go. Pretty blonde Isabella looks about as Catherine studies the visitor's book at the pump room.
No, his name's not there. I think he must be gone from Bath. Yet he never mentioned his stay would be so short.
Perhaps it's just as well. My brother John says the whole family is very bad. The eldest son, as bad as Lord Byron, John says.
Surely he's mistaken. Mr. Tilney couldn't have been kinder or more gentlemanlike.
Appearances often deceive, you know.
But he is a clergyman.
That signifies nothing these days.
They pass the same two lads from the bookshop who stare.
Sufferable.
They eye the girls. The two young guys follow the girls out. Clearly delighted, Isabella saunters along. Catherine glances round.
Are they following?
No. They're going towards the churchyard.
Good. We are rid of them. Now, if we turn down there, it will bring us to Milson Street.
But shouldn't we come upon them again if we did that?
Well, never mind that. Come, make haste.
Isabella hurries Catherine down an alley and they come to a street busy with carriages. The two young men are strolling along the other side of the street. Isabella waits impatiently to cross.
Odious carriages, I detest him.
Isabella!
Oh, how delightful! Mr. Morland and my brother John.
They jump out of their carriage and approach the girls.
I didn't know you were coming to Bath.
Thorpe's idea, and when I remembered you were here, and you, Miss Thorpe, nothing would have kept me away. I'm very happy to see you again.
And are you?
James gazes fondly at Isabella.
My good friend John Thorpe.
Enchanté. I had the pleasure of seeing you dance the other evening.
Yes, I remember.
I hope I may have the pleasure of dancing with you myself before too long.
We were just walking towards Edgar's buildings.
Were you? Well then, damn it, we'll walk along with you. Miss Morland? Are you fond of an open carriage, Miss Morland?
Yes, very.
Well, would you permit me to drive you up Lansdowne Hill one day this week?
Thank you. You're very kind. But would it be proper?
Damn it, this is Bath. You know, everything's more free and easy in Bath.
Catherine is dancing with the hunky John Thorpe at the assembly rooms. This time, the men and women are in two separate rows facing one another, and the formal dance involves lots of pairing and separating again. John is gazing keenly at Catherine as they dance, and Catherine's brother James is dancing with Isabella. Again, the women are in long, pale, empire-line dresses and wear their hair up, decorated with feathers, ribbons and pearls. The men are in their formal wear and are sporting silken cravats. John smiles at Catherine as they dance.
Penny for your thoughts, Miss Morland.
I was just... Have you ever read Udolpho, Mr. Thorpe?
Udolpho? No. No, I never read novels. I leave all that to Isabella. I read The Monk the other day.
Monk? Is it as shocking as everybody says?
You can borrow it if you care to. Hot stuff, you know.
Catherine looks a little bashful. She curtsies sweetly as the dance ends. Isabella hurries up.
Isn't this altogether delightful, Catherine?
What's that? Jig it again?
Catherine's face falls as she catches sight of Henry Tilney with an elegant woman.
Morland. Allow me to introduce Ella. My sister.
Your sister? Oh, yes, I'm very happy to meet you, Miss Tilney.
And are you? Henry has told me so much about you.
I can't imagine how surprised I was to see your brother again. I felt so sure he's been quite gone from Bath.
Yes. When he saw you before, he was here to engage lodgings for us. He only stayed the one night.
Oh, I see. Your brother dances very well.
Yes.
And he is very amusing.
Yes, he is, when he cares to be.
Catherine follows Eleanor's gaze and sees Henry talking to a stern gentleman in uniform.
I'm talking to Mr. Tilney.
That's our father, General Tilney.
He looks as if he were displeased with us.
It is only his way.
General Tilney leaves Henry.
And is your mother here with you in Bath as well?
Our mother is dead. So this is your first time in Bath. Do you like it?
Very much indeed.
There are some very pretty walks round about. Henry and I walk most mornings. Should you care to join us one day?
Yes. More than anything in the world, I love long walks. Though I can't persuade my friend to join me. She thinks it's a waste of time when there's so many other things to do in town.
I can see that she might.
Isabella giggles with friends.
In that case, shall we say tomorrow at 12, unless it rains?
Yes, Catherine. You simply must hear this. Come quickly. Excuse me.
Isabella pulls Catherine into the throng and Henry, returning with three ice creams, just misses her. Next morning, John, Isabella and James call for Catherine.
Make haste, Miss Morland. Put on your hat, there's no time to lose. We are going to drive to Blaze Castle.
Mr. Thorpe.
How do you do, Miss Allen?
My sweetest Catherine. Isn't this delightful? Blaze Castle. Nothing could be more romantic.
Yes, I'm sure, but I'm very sorry I can't come with you. I'm expecting Miss Tilney and her brother to call on me to take a country walk.
Not they. I saw him but 5 minutes ago. Doesn't he drive a phaeton with a pair of chestnuts?
I don't know, indeed.
Yes, I saw him large as life turning up the Lansdowne Road with a smart-looking girl by his side.
Perhaps they mean to call later.
No, they don't. I heard Tilney hallooing to a man they were going as far as Wick Rocks.
I don't understand it at all. Miss Tilney promised.
My dear one, in this false world, people often make promises they have little intention of keeping. Remember, we are your true friends. We keep our promises.
Yes. But what if they should come after all?
My dear little scatterbrain sister, haven't you just heard Thorpe tell us? They're halfway to Wick Rocks.
Then perhaps I should come with you.
Please, Miss Morland.
Catherine's in John's horse-drawn gig.
Really nice, isn't she? Smooth as silk.
How do you do, sir?
Scoundrel!
They nearly knock down Mr. Allen.
Gentlemen.
Mr. Allen! Yes, and so good-natured.
And rich as Croesus, or so I hear.
I believe Mr. Allen is very rich.
And no children at all?
No, none.
But you're quite a favourite there, I gather.
Mr. and Mrs. Allen are very kind to me, yes. Ever since I was a baby.
Excellent, excellent.
Oh, Miss Tilney!
They pass Henry and Eleanor.
Stop now! It's Miss Tilney and her brother!
Let me help to pay if I try to stop him now!
Stop, Mr.
It's
Thorpe!
It's too late!
Well, I'll get down,
it's
I will!
It's not possible! Whoa, there!
How could you deceive me so?
Well, what if I did? Where would you rather be, in a spanking gig driving to Blaze Castle or trailing about in the dirt with some canting prig of a parson?
Mr. Tilney is not a canting prig! And you have made it seem as if I've broken my promise to them.
Whoa there!
Look here. Miss Morland, I might not have been completely straight with you, but I had good reason. You think of your brother's happiness and Isabella's. They couldn't go off unchaperoned. And I was thinking of you, too. Not altogether happy to see you with the Tilneys. The whole family has a terrible reputation. Something very strange about the mother's death.
Can't mean...
We must be careful when making new acquaintances. We're not all as honest as you and I, huh?
But Mr. Tilney and his sister have been so kind to me.
Truly sorry, Miss Morland, if I have caused you any distress, but you can set it right tomorrow. Let's at least try and enjoy ourselves today. Damn it, I've been looking forward to driving you out more than anything. Come on, what do you say?
Oh, very well.
Oh. Everything all right, Thorpe?
Absolutely. Walk on.
James and Isabella follow on. It's pouring with rain and the two gigs have to slow right down on a country road for a farmer and his sheep. The gulls are soaking wet.
I say, sir, can you have your sheep, please?
It's just a spot of rain. It'll clear up in no time.
Thorpe, we better go back. Your sister thinks so too. We're not halfway to Blaze Castle.
Very well, as you wish. It's all one to me. Honestly, if your brother hadn't such a damn beast to drive, we'd been at Blaze this half hour gone. Will you move your sheep? I need to turn.
Take my bloody time. Come on, girl.
Catherine is at Isabella's, staring disconsolately into a mirror. Both girls are in their underclothes.
What would the men think if they could see us now?
How can I ever face the Tonys again?
Now, you mustn't be cross with John, dearest one. Do you know he told me he liked you better than any girl he had ever seen? And he thinks you're the prettiest girl in Bath.
Don't know why he should think that.
No need for false modesty. Now, how far have you got on with Udolpho?
I've just got to the Black Veil.
The Black Veil. Well, I wouldn't tell behind it, not for the world. And when you've finished it, you will read The Monk. That's my brother's favourite, you know. Oh,
yes, he spoke of it. Is it really very horrid?
It is the most horrid, shocking thing in all the world. Ambrosio the monk begins very holy, but is drawn into vice by Matilda, and she gives him a magic branch by which he can pass through walls and into Antonia's bedchamber. But it is too shocking. I should blush to tell you. You must read it yourself.
The friar pronounced the magic words, and a thick smoke arose over the magic mirror. At length he beheld Antonia's lovely form. She was undressing to bathe herself, and the amorous monk had full opportunity to observe the voluptuous contours and admirable symmetry of her person as she drew off her last garment. At this moment a tame linnet flew towards her, nestled its head between her breasts, and nibbled them in wanton play. Ambrosio could bear no more. The blood boiled in his veins, and a raging fire rushed through his limbs. I must possess her, he cried. No, no, Ambrosio. I shall no longer be able to combat my passions. I am convinced with every moment that I have but one alternative. I must enjoy you or die.
Catherine sleeps restlessly after reading. Catherine's in a box at the theatre with Mr. and Mrs. Allen, John and Isabella Thorpe, and James. A golden-haired diva is singing up a storm on stage, which has a golden throne on it. Mr. Allen is watching through opera glasses. Henry, Eleanor, and their father are in a box opposite. General Tilney stares across at Catherine, his expression stern. Henry follows his father's gaze and meets Catherine's. She smiles, but he merely nods curtly. Eleanor has observed this exchange and whispers something to him. John Thorpe leans forward to talk to Catherine.
Damn fine-looking woman. She's nothing to you, you know.
Henry watches them and looks displeased. The curtain comes down. After the show, Catherine hurries out into the corridor to catch up with Henry and the Tilneys.
Miss Morland, Mrs. Allen, Mr. Allen.
Mr. Tilney, you must have thought me so rude, but they told me you'd gone out in a phaeton, and then when I saw you, I begged Mr. Thorpe to stop, but he only went faster. If only it slowed down, I would have jumped out and run back to you. Please believe me, I would 10,000 times rather have been with you. Are you and Miss Tilney really very angry with me?
I must confess I felt a little slighted, but my sister was quite sure there was some misunderstanding. Eleanor, you were right, as usual. Miss Morland is not to blame. She was abducted by force.
No, not exactly, but truly, I did try to make him stop.
Don't tease her, Henry. You were quite cast down when you thought Miss Morland preferred the company of others to your own.
Perhaps she still does.
No, indeed. That is...
Then may I renew our invitation? Shall we say the day after tomorrow for our walk?
Miss Catherine Morland, very amiable, though, very rich too. Ward of a Mr. Allen, who made a fortune in trade. And with no one to spend it on but her, she'll bring a deal of money to her marriage. When the old man pops off, she'll be one of the richest women in the country.
Obliged to you, sir.
Thorpe. John Thorpe. Delighted to have been...
The General leaves John.
Mr. Thorpe, perhaps you'd introduce me to the young lady.
Miss Morland, this is General Tilney.
Catherine curtsies to the formidable gentleman.
Charming. And did I overhear a co-op proposed?
Yes, sir, the day after tomorrow.
Then perhaps you would do us the honour of spending the rest of the day with us, after your work, if Mr. and Mrs. Allen can be persuaded to spare you.
I'm sure they'd be happy to spare me, sir. And they'd have great pleasure in coming.
Excellent. I shall look forward to making your better acquaintance, Miss Morland.
Henry and his sister are surprised. Catherine, Henry and Eleanor stroll along a steep forested footpath.
What do you think, Catherine?
Oh, it's wonderful. It reminds me of the south of France, the Languedoc, you know?
Yes. Have you travelled much in France?
No. Not at all. I've never been there. But I've seen pictures, and it's just as Mrs. Radcliffe describes it in Udolpho.
Ah, Mrs. Radcliffe.
But I suppose you don't read novels.
I read Udolpho straight through in 2 days with my hair standing up on end the whole time. I often think there's more life and truth and feeling in a good novel than in 100 dull sermons.
Do you really believe that?
Oh, go on. Don't wait for me.
Why should you think I don't believe it?
Because I think you like to tease me. Because the real world's different from the world in stories.
Is it?
Of course it is. I love to read Mrs. Radcliffe, but I don't think the real world's full of murders and abductions and ghosts with clanking chains and seductions and everything. Well, not in Fullerton anyway.
Perhaps not quite so many murders and abductions. The broken hearts, betrayals, long-held grudges, schemes of revenge. Fear, hatred, and despair. Are they not part of all of our lives, even in Fullerton?
I don't know. I'd like to think not.
Well then, I hope your experience of life is the exception that proves the rule.
A man arrives on horseback. The smartly dressed man dismounts and leads his horse down the hill to them.
Forgive me, Tilney, for interrupting your walk. I've no time to lose.
Of course. You're expected.
Mom.
Come, let's walk on a little.
Henry escorts Catherine away. Eleanor lingers to talk to the new arrival, who holds her hand.
He was a close acquaintance of ours. A very good friend. He was obliged to leave the country at short notice. He was able to make his farewells to me last evening. But was no doubt anxious to say goodbye to my sister, too, before he left.
I see.
There is no reason why the matter should come up. But my sister and I would be very grateful if you did not mention to my father that we saw that gentleman here today.
No, of course.
Thank you.
Night and carriages are passing the Allen's house. Catherine is lying in a bathtub full of milky water, gazing dreamily ahead. The winding vines on the floral wallpaper behind her start to grow, leading into the world of her imagination.
The monk reeled from the unholy sight. "Receive this talisman," she replied. "While you bear this, every door will fly open, and walls will melt away. It will procure you access tomorrow night to Antonia's bedchamber."
The vines grow into a tree under which Catherine is bathing. Henry appears dressed for a Sunday service. Catherine ducks under the water, peering out at Henry, who comes closer to the tub.
Nothing to be ashamed of. It's all God's creation. Come.
Henry holds out his hand to Catherine, who takes it and rises up out of the water, glistening and naked under his gaze. She wakes up in bed. She sits up. Isabella strolls along with John and James.
You knew the second you came to the house, I could tell. And the way you spoke to my mother, I could just tell. It was almost like fate.
Catherine? No, sit down.
Isabella's in Catherine's room.
Can you guess? Your brother has made me the happiest girl on earth.
You mean you and James?
Are in love. He confessed as much to me this afternoon, and you know my nature. I could never trifle with a man's affections. In short, I told him his love was returned.
Catherine! Wait.
He's waiting downstairs.
They join James downstairs in the drawing room.
I know I needn't ask whether you approve, Catherine.
Oh, no, indeed. I'm surprised. It's all happened so quickly.
Not so. I believe I've been in love with your friend since the first time I set eyes on her.
And I. The very first day he came to us last Christmas. The very first moment. I remember I wore this yellow gown. My hair was up in braids.
I'm come to say goodbye, Catherine. I'm going straight to Fullerton to seek our parents' consent.
Ah, Morland, there you are.
Miss Morland, sadly, I too must take my leave for the present. Just for the present. I'm going to accompany James to Fullerton and then onto town to help him choose a ring. Perhaps I might look for one for myself while I'm there. Do you think I should? A famous good thing, this marrying scheme. What do you think of it?
I think it's a very good thing too.
I'm so pleased to hear you say that. Do you ever hear the old song, going to one wedding brings on another? Perhaps you and I might try the truth of that. I shall think of you when I'm in town. Come on, James, we must tear ourselves away.
John leads the way.
Go, perhaps forever. Isabella, whatever do you mean? Your mother and father, what will they say? I'm sure they'll be very happy for James, but my fortune will be so small. How could they consent to it? Your brother, who might marry anybody. I wouldn't think the difference in fortune would be anything to signify. Oh, my sweetest Catherine, in your generous heart, I'm sure it would not matter at all. But I mustn't expect everyone to think the same. I only wish our situations were reversed. If I had the command of millions, if I were mistress of the whole world, your brother would still be my only choice.
Isabella and Catherine are dressed up and out at the assembly rooms.
Now, Catherine, you know I'm only here for your sake. You know my heart is 40 miles away. And as for dancing, don't mention it, I beg you. It is quite out of the question. I dare say Charles Hodge will plague me to death about it, but I shall cut him very short, I can tell you. I wonder where he is.
The Tilneys arrive with their father.
Do you believe he's coming to talk to you?
He approaches Catherine.
Miss Morland.
Henry glances at his sister as the general takes Catherine's hand and bows.
Delightful. You will excuse me now. Excellent.
The general guides Catherine to Henry's side and goes.
Allow me to introduce my brother, Captain Tilney.
Tall and smart in a red uniform. He saunters away and eyes up Isabella as he passes her. Isabella turns and looks after the dashing captain.
Let my brother's ill manners offend you. That's how he is, I'm afraid. He was ill-mannered as a baby.
Surprised at you being so disrespectful to your older brother. And anyway, how could you know what he was like as a baby? When he was a baby, you were not yet born.
True enough. My mother told me of it. I hope you're not already engaged for the next dance.
No, indeed.
My rival having left Bath.
Indeed, he's not. You mustn't tease me. So do you not know Mr. Thorpe at all?
No, not at all.
Strange. He seems to know a great deal about your family.
And none of it to our credit? Well, I have always found that ignorance and prejudice hold no bar to forming the strongest opinions.
You think him ignorant and prejudiced? I know he doesn't always tell the truth, but he's been very kind and attentive to me. You think he isn't to be trusted?
Dear Miss Morland, has it not occurred to you that I might not be the best person to consult on the matter of Mr. Thorpe?
My lords, ladies and gentlemen, the next dance will be on a summer's day.
Henry leads her to the dance.
Good God, Henry, you're not going to stand up in that mall, are you?
I certainly am.
That being so, do you think your friend might dance with me?
No, I am sorry. I know for certain that she has a very particular reason not to dance tonight.
Is that so? Pity.
Isabella watches the captain walk away. Henry and Catherine join the dance, which begins in two rows on the ballroom floor, with the ladies on one side and the gentlemen on the other. Every third couple in the row move first, promenading around their own partner and then threading in and out of the other stationary men and women. Henry and Catherine smile at each other as they promenade. Next, the ensemble circle in groups of six, wheeling around in a circle before resuming the two-row shape and letting other couples promenade. Henry spots his brother dancing with Isabella and grins at Catherine.
Why are you smiling?
Look there.
Isabella shoots Catherine an I-couldn't-help-it look, and the captain looks smug. Later, the girls ride home in the Allens' carriage with Mrs. Allen, who's asleep.
I don't wonder at your surprise. I refused him for as long as I possibly could, but he would not take no for an answer. He's the eldest son, you know, the heir to Northanger Abbey. Not that that weighs anything with me. I am in love with the best man in the whole world. Did you think him handsome? Who? Captain Tilney, silly. Who? Yes, very handsome. But didn't your brother say he was very bad? As bad as Lord Byron. Oh, John will say anything that comes into his head. I hardly ever take any notice of him. But then, I always want to know what to believe. One thing you can be certain of, my affection for you and your dear, dear brother.
The carriage rattles on down the dark street. Catherine's dashing down a gothic-looking corridor in her nightgown. She passes a dungeon and James calls out to her from inside.
Catherine, help me, for God's sake!
She dashes into a bedchamber and finds Isabella in nightclothes, lying on a bed, panting with her wrists bound to the bedstead. Captain Tilney stands over her, smiling wickedly. Catherine gasps. Flushed, Catherine wakes up in bed as her maid draws the bedroom curtains. Later, she visits Isabella and Mrs. Thorpe in Isabella's room.
Pardon, dames? My parents have consented?
Yes. Your father has been very good. James is to have a living worth £400 a year, as soon as he is old enough to take it. But that won't be for another 2 years, so we must wait that long before we marry. It seems it wasn't possible for your father to do anything for us immediately.
I'm sure Mr. Morland has behaved vastly handsome. If he finds he can do more by and by, I dare say he will. And Isabella's wishes are so moderate.
For myself, it's nothing. I never think of myself, but poor James. £400 a year is hardly enough for the common necessaries of life.
But I suppose everybody has the right to do what they like with their own money.
I'm very sure that my father's promised as much as he can afford. But Mr. Allen, I was sure, would do something for James.
Perhaps he does not approve of his choice of bride.
Why should Mr. Allen do anything for James? Or for any of us? It was very kind of Mr. and Mrs. Allen to bring me to Bath, but none of us has any expectations from Mr. Allen.
My dear, sweet Catherine,
you know I care nothing for money. If we could only be married tomorrow, I would be happy to live on £50 a year. But that's the sting. That's why you find me so cast down. The 2 years we must wait before dear Morland can have the living. Catherine.
Isabella holds out her hand. Catherine takes Isabella's hand and gives her a reluctant smile.
2 years is a long time. At least she can marry the man she loves. Not everyone is so fortunate.
No, I suppose not. How sad that is.
Yes, it is. But how many couples marry for love?
I believe my mother and father love each other even more than they love us. And they love us very much. When I was a little girl, I used to think it was like that for everyone. It was only when I started to read novels that I realised it was not.
I shouldn't have thought one would have to read novels to find that out. I think you have had quite a dangerous upbringing.
Dangerous? How?
Well, it's as Henry says. You've been brought up to believe that everyone is as pure in heart as you are.
I don't think I'm very pure in heart.
Really, why?
Eleanor smiles at Catherine. Henry's up ahead.
What's the joke?
Nothing to concern you.
The three of them return to the Tilneys' lodgings.
I love our walks. I think I should like to stay in Bath forever and go walking with you every day.
Unfortunately, that won't be possible.
Oh? Our father told us just this morning that he's determined on quitting Bath by the end of the week.
Oh.
Armas Moreland. Capital. Excellent.
The slim, dark-haired general comes down the stairs to Catherine, who looks a little frightened.
Can you, Miss Moreland, be prevailed on to quit this scene of public triumph and oblige us with your company at Northanger Abbey?
Northanger Abbey?
Well, Miss Moreland, what do you say?
I'm very honoured, sir. If Mr. and Mrs. Allen agree, I should be delighted to accept.
He smiles wolfishly. Isabella and Catherine are at the pump rooms. Catherine buys them both a glass of water.
Northanger Abbey? Aren't you frightened to go there on your own?
I confess I am a little.
Well, I dare say it'll be very thrilling for you. I do hope you don't forget me, Catherine. Or our dearest John. No, indeed. No need to be coy. I heard from him today that you and he are as good as engaged.
Indeed we are not.
Useless to dissemble, my dear. Your secret's out. He says in his letter not half an hour before he left Bath, you gave him the most positive encouragement. He says he as good as made you an offer.
No. No, there must be some mistake. Your brother must have misunderstood me, and I certainly had no idea he thought he was making me an offer. Please, undeceive him and beg his pardon.
Oh. Well, I dare say we should all be allowed a little harmless flirtation.
There was no flirtation. Not on my side.
And if no one were allowed to change their minds, where would we all be? Perhaps it's for the best after all.
Isabella, please understand me once and for all.
Shh! Here he comes.
Who?
Tilly, of course. Oh, it would not have happened for the world. Look away, perhaps he's not seen us.
Annoyed, Catherine does as she's bid. Captain Tilney sidles up to Isabella.
Always to be watched. In person or by proxy.
Nonsense. My spirit, you know, is pretty independent.
I wish your heart were independent. That would be enough for me.
My heart? What can you have to do with hearts? None of you men have hearts.
But we have eyes. And they give us torment enough.
I think Mrs. Allen and your mother are expecting us. Will you come, Isabella?
You go. And tell them I'll follow. And if I shouldn't see you, write and tell me all your news from Northanger.
Catherine turns away abruptly and puts down her glass. She glances back in time to see Isabella take the captain's arm before they saunter off together. Isabella glances back too. A pedestrian leaps back as the general's carriage rockets around a corner. It's drawn by four dark horses. Henry follows in a small open carriage pulled by a single horse. They arrive at the Allens. A footman jumps down and opens the door.
Come along, ma'am. 4 minutes late already, coming from Milsom Street.
I'm sure Miss Moreland won't keep you waiting, Father. Oh, Catherine, my dear, quickly.
They're here.
How grand. A chaise and four. You never aspired to that, Mr. Allen.
No, indeed. Well, Catherine, we shall miss you.
Thank you for all your kindness. It has been such a happy time.
There, there, my dear.
I shall be sharp about it. These great folks don't like to be kept waiting.
The general is pacing impatiently as Catherine hurries out into the street.
Miss Moreland, 1,000 pardons for our late arrival. My eldest son must bear the blame. He stays on in Bath. Now, my dear Miss Moreland, I have a proposal. As it is a fine day, how should you like to travel in the carriage with my son Henry? You will enjoy the air and be better able to see the country. It is, of course, entirely up to you.
I should like that very much.
Henry gives Catherine a friendly smile as his father helps Eleanor into the chaise. Later, Henry is steering the carriage down a country road with Catherine beside him.
Did your father say that Captain Tilney stays on in Bath?
Yes.
Oh.
You're disappointed. You were hoping for my brother's company at Northanger, perhaps.
No. No, not at all. That is, I should have no objection to his company.
And what is it? Come.
I'm anxious about your brother and Miss Thorpe. I think he cannot know that she's engaged to my brother.
I suppose he thinks he has a chance with her.
But doesn't he realise how wrong it is of him and what pain it must give to my brother?
I don't think you should distress yourself too much, Miss Morland. Your brother should be returning to Bath very soon, and my brother should be leaving to rejoin his regiment. And that will be the end of that. Now, look there.
A glimpse of the huge castle-like abbey through the trees.
It's exactly as I imagined. It's just like what we read about.
Are you prepared to encounter all of its horrors?
Horrors? Is Northanger haunted, then?
Well, that's just the least of it. Dungeons and sliding panels. Skeletons, strange, unearthly cries in the night that pierce your very soul.
And vampires? Don't say vampires. I could bear anything but not vampires.
Miss Morland, I do believe you're teasing me now. But whilst to say there is a kind of vampirism. No, let's just say that all houses have their secrets, and Northanger is no exception.
They approach Northanger Abbey, which is a magnificent greystone building with Gothic archways, battlements, and crenellated towers. A manservant holds their horse. They enter the grand building. General Tilney is waiting for them on the stairs. The pair exchange a look as they walk up to him.
Miss Morland, welcome to Northanger Abbey.
Eleanor shows a wide-eyed Catherine into her grand, spacious room. It has a four-poster bed, candelabra, and a fire flickering.
I hope you will be comfortable. Do please, I beg you, make as little alteration to your dress as possible. My father is most particular about mealtimes. I'm sorry to have to ask you.
No, it's quite all right.
I'll see you in a few minutes then.
She leaves Catherine alone. Looking thrilled and awed by the romantic space she finds herself in, Catherine goes over to a huge set of wooden cupboard doors and peeps over her shoulder before gently opening them. Catherine's wearing a short pale blue jacket and has her hair gathered up and pinned. She peeps inside and closes them again. Catherine crosses the room and sits down on a big wooden trunk at the foot of the bed. She grows curious about what she's sitting on and kneels down in front of the trunk to open the hasp. She starts to lift the lid but drops it shut again as a maid comes in.
If you please. Miss Tilney says, do you need any help, miss?
Oh, no. No, thank you.
The maid bobs a curtsy and leaves. Catherine hurriedly pulls off her short blue jacket and starts to get ready. A bewigged footman stands stiffly in the hall as the general paces about, ready to go in and dine. He checks his pocket watch and glances over at Henry, who stops slouching and straightens up smartly. Catherine and Eleanor hurry down to join them.
Are you ready?
Catherine's wearing a simple bronze-coloured dress. Eleanor's in powder blue. They join the men.
Miss Morland, charming. Dinner to be on the table directly!
The general stiffly holds out his arm to Catherine, who glances unsurely at Eleanor before placing her hand on it and letting him lead her into the grand dining hall with its fireplace and long polished table. Henry escorts his sister in behind them. The general pulls out Catherine's chair, but she's so overawed that she almost forgets to sit down. The general clears his throat and Catherine remembers to sit. The long dining table is set for just the four of them, with a dazzling array of plates and silverware. One of the male servants serves Catherine some soup, and she's momentarily flummoxed by which spoon she ought to use. Eleanor subtly signals the correct spoon, and Catherine smiles gratefully.
I hope you find our simple style of living to your taste, Miss Morland. No doubt you have been used to better-sized apartments at Mr. Allen's.
No, indeed, sir. Mr. Allen's dining parlour is only half the size of this room.
Well, now, I suppose I care as little as any man for such things. But a tolerably large eating room is one of the necessaries of life. Hmm?
Tolerably large indeed, sir. But I don't think I've ever been in so large a dining room as this one.
You have not? Well, no doubt the rooms at Mr. Allen's are exactly the true size for rational happiness.
Henry shoots Catherine a supportive smile as they start on their soup. Lightning flashes over the abbey as Catherine walks up a dark staircase accompanied by a maid. They reach Catherine's bedroom door and the maid leaves her with a candle and goes back downstairs. Spooked by more lightning, Catherine scurries into the bedroom. Later, Catherine is standing near the candle in the darkened bedroom, fastening her long white nightgown. She picks up the candle and is drawn back over to the wooden trunk at the foot of the bed. Holding the silver candle holder with one hand, she kneels down and lifts up the trunk lid. At the bottom of the trunk, she finds some ancient sheets of manuscript, crumpled and brown with age. She holds them up and tries to read the writing on them. All of a sudden, the storm blows the window open. The candle blows out. Catherine leaps into bed and pulls the covers up. Next morning, Catherine is sleeping peacefully as the maid enters and puts a fresh cup of tea on her bedside table. The maid steps on the dropped manuscripts.
Oh, boy. Whatever are these old things?
No. No, leave them, please.
Frowning suspiciously, the maid leaves the bundle of papers on the trunk and goes out. As soon as she's gone, Catherine jumps out of bed, snatches up the papers, and holding them up to the light, tries to make out the faded handwriting.
Stockings. Cravats. Laundry lists.
This was my mother's favourite place. I used to walk so often here with her. Though I never loved it then, as I have loved it since.
Her death must have been a great affliction.
A great and increasing one.
What was she like? Did she look like you?
I wish I could show you her portrait. It hangs in her private chamber.
I suppose you were with her to the last?
No. I was away from home when she died. Her illness was sudden and short, and before I arrived, it was all over.
So you didn't see her body?
No. I wish I could have done. Perhaps it would help me to think of her at peace.
Yes. I should like to see her room, if you're willing to show me.
We never go there. It is my father's wish.
But to see her picture?
Yes. Why should you not see it?
Eleanor is leading Catherine up a rather dark and foreboding staircase when the general appears on a balcony overlooking them.
What do you do there?
I was going to show Miss Morland Mother's...
There is nothing to interest Miss Morland in this part of the house. I'm surprised at you, Eleanor.
Chastised, Eleanor leads Catherine away again. Catherine sits writing by a window overlooking the grounds.
Dearest Isabella, I long to hear your news. I hope everything is well with you and with James, and that your brother is not too much offended with me.
Northanger Abbey is all that I expected it to be, and Eleanor and her brother very kind. Oh, Isabella, I fear that this house holds a terrible secret relating to the death of Mrs. Tilney. Here I am! I cannot write more now. Send me your news. Your loving friend, Catherine.
At the dinner table...
This is a sad day, Miss Morland. A sad day for me, that is. I have to go up to town for several days on business. I trust you'll be able to entertain our guest properly while I'm gone, Henry.
Nothing would give me greater pleasure, sir.
Henry shoots Catherine a wry, conspiratorial look, and she rewards him with a smile. He, Catherine, and Eleanor gather in the driveway to see the General's coach off. With a carefree spring in his step, Henry grabs a wooden ladder.
Come along.
Henry climbs up an apple tree, picks some fruit and tosses it down to the girls, who catch it in their skirts.
One for me, Henry!
This is a nice one.
Later, the three of them sit by the fire. Catherine darts little looks from under her lashes at Henry, who's toasting a crumpet, and he looks back at her, then burns his fingers.
I thought I might show you Whitstone tomorrow, if you'd like to. It's nothing to Northanger, of course, just a country vicarage, but I'm very fond of it.
I'd love to.
Henry smiles warmly at her. Next day, under a grey sky, the pair ride down a grassy slope to a lake, across from which stands a modest but imposing grey stone house. They're both wearing tall riding hats, and Catherine rides side saddle. Henry points across the lake.
Look.
Is that your home? It's lovely.
Very glad you think so. I fear we may be about to get a little damp.
Come on. I'll race you back.
Catherine canters off gamely on her black steed. Grinning, Henry follows on his white one. It's pouring with rain and very muddy by the time Catherine rides through the Abbey's gates. Henry's not far behind her. They walk their horses under an archway near the main doors, and two stable hands come out to assist them. Henry gets off his horse and lifts Catherine down from hers. Henry takes off his jacket and puts it down, before turning to Catherine, who has splashes of mud on her pale cheek. He reaches out and gently tries to wipe the mud away as Catherine gazes up at him wonderingly. Henry's cupping her beautiful face in his hands, transfixed, when Eleanor opens the doors and he jumps back quickly.
Look at the state of the pair of you. I'll go and get Richards to draw your bath, Catherine.
The pair trade shy looks. Now the two walk in the grounds, with Eleanor keeping a discreet distance.
When we were coming to Northanger Abbey, you said that the house held secrets.
Did I? And have you discovered any dreadful revelations yet?
No, but I'd like to know what you meant.
I think that shall have to remain a secret. A secret once explained loses all of its charms and all of its danger, too. Why don't you imagine the worst thing you can and write your own gothic romance about it?
Northanger Abbey would make a very good title, don't you think?
Now you're mocking me. But I can't help feeling that this house is not a happy one.
Not since our mother died. And even before then. I envy you your happy childhood. My brother Frederick is well enough, I think, sowing his wild oats, but soon he shall have to make an advantageous match. My sister is not happy. Remember the man we met on our country walk? He's a good friend of mine. He's a lot more than that to my sister. But our father has refused to sanction the match. Edward is only a second son, and Eleanor must marry the heir to a rich estate.
And you?
Well, if I'm to retain my father's favour, I must marry a fortune too.
And shall you?
I always hoped I'd be lucky. The girl I fell in love with would come with a fortune attached.
And if she should not?
Then that would be a very stern test of my character.
Henry gazes kindly down at Catherine.
Perhaps we'd better head back. I want to set off for Woodston before nightfall.
The three head back to the Abbey. The girls stand in the driveway to see Henry off.
See you tomorrow for dinner!
Catherine retraces her steps up the sinister staircase to Henry's mother's room, pausing to look with distaste at a stuffed eagle in a glass case. Wearing a plain white muslin gown, Catherine moves on along a shadowy landing and trots briskly up another flight of dimly lit steps. She reaches the forbidden bedroom door and, glancing over her shoulder, opens it and steps inside. A four-poster bed and some tall windows are hung about with long white drapes, and there are white dust sheets over some of the furniture. Catherine walks further into the room and gazes up at Mrs. Tilney's framed oil portrait, which is hanging on the wall. The portrait reveals a slightly sombre-looking young woman with brown hair. Catherine fingers some dust from the mantel shelf, then turns away and gazes about the room. Oh. Henry walks in, hat in hand.
Might I ask how you come to be here all alone?
I wanted to see your mother's room. Eleanor was going to show me, but your father prevented us.
And so you thought you'd come and see it for yourself?
Yes.
I suppose Eleanor has talked to you about our mother.
Yes. But that is not very much, but what she did say was her dying so suddenly and none of you being at home, and I thought perhaps your father had not been very fond of her.
And from these circumstances, you infer some negligence? Or something even worse? Then let me reassure you, Catherine. My mother's illness was sudden. And Eleanor was from home, but I was here throughout. And so was my brother Frederick. Oh. Our mother received every possible attention. Our physician was satisfied that nothing more could be done for her. The matter was deeply distressing, as you may imagine.
Yes, of course. But your father, was he distressed?
For a time, greatly so. She had had to bear a great deal from him, but when she was dead, he felt her loss.
I'm very glad of it. It would have been very shocking if he'd...
If he had what? If I understand you rightly, you have been suspecting my father of a crime so dreadful.
You said yourself the house was full of secrets.
And so you decided that my father must be a murderer. And to you, at least, he's shown nothing but kindness. Catherine... How could you? What sort of a fevered imagination must you have? Perhaps, after all, it is possible to read too many novels.
He stalks out. Later, a distraught Catherine stands at a window watching Henry canter away on his horse. Catherine covers her face and sobs. Still looking upset, Catherine makes her way to a woven willow-backed bench seat in the Abbey grounds where Eleanor finds her.
Look, Catherine.
Eleanor's holding a letter. She notices Catherine's tears.
Oh, whatever is the matter? I can't tell you. Please don't, baby.
I have been so wickedly foolish, and your brother knows of it, and now he will hate me for it, and so will you when he tells you.
Oh, my dear Catherine, I am quite sure that nothing you could do could make me hate you, or Henry either.
I saw his face. I know he will never, ever respect me again.
Oh, come, come, perhaps it's not as bad as you think. Look, here is a letter for you.
It'll be from Isabella. Oh, no, it is my brother's handwriting.
Catherine tears open the seal and reads it.
Catherine, I think it my due tell you that everything is at an end between Miss Thorpe and me.
No.
I shall not enter into particulars. They would only pain you more. You will soon hear enough to know where the blame lies. I am ashamed to think how long I bore it. Dear Catherine, I hope your visit at Northanger may be over before Captain Tilney makes his engagement known.
Captain Tilney? Frederick? Yes. It's just what I feared. Oh, poor James, he loved her so much. But Frederick, and they are engaged.
Yes.
No, I can't believe that.
No, look here. Dearest Catherine, beware how you give your heart.
Dear Catherine, I am sorry for your brother. Sorry that anyone you love should be unhappy. But my surprise would be greater at Frederick's marrying her than at any other part of the story.
Why do you say that?
What are Miss Thorpe's connections? What is her fortune? Are they a wealthy family?
No, not very. I don't believe Isabella has any fortune at all. You think your father will forbid the match?
I doubt if the matter will reach his ears at all.
Why? Whatever do you mean?
Catherine, your friend has dealt very badly with your brother. But I fear she is far out of her depth with mine.
The captain walks Isabella past soldiers and loose women in a hallway. He guides her into a bedroom and shuts the door. Isabella wakes up in the lodging house bed, her modesty covered by the bedsheets. Captain Tilney's by the fire in his shirt and breeches, smoking a cigar. Isabel sits up with a little smile.
And are we engaged?
Captain Tilney saunters arrogantly nearer and leans in the doorway with a contemptuous look for Isabella.
Make yourself decent, Miss Thorpe. I must return you to your friends before you're missed.
Isabella's shoulders sag. Later, she's sitting on her own bed, writing a letter as her maids pack.
My dearest Catherine, thank God we leave this vile place tomorrow. Since you went away, I've had no pleasure in it, and everybody one cares for is gone. I'm quite uneasy about your dear brother, and am fearful of some misunderstanding. You will write to him and set everything right. He is the only man I ever did or could love, and I know you will convince him of it.
I most certainly shan't.
Catherine and Eleanor in the Abbey Gardens.
So, Frederick is safe from her. I can't say I'm surprised.
Aren't you? I am very. I wish I'd never known her.
It will soon be as if you never had.
There's one thing I can't understand. What has Captain Tilney been about all this time? Why should he pay her such attentions and then fly off himself?
He has his vanity as well as Miss Thorpe. And he is accustomed to having his way. Though I am surprised he should have stooped to such an easy conquest.
Really? Then I'm sorry for Isabella.
I am sure she will be over it soon enough. I hope I don't need to tell you that his brother has a very different character. Henry has the best and truest heart in the world.
Catherine smiles bashfully. The general's carriage thunders home at night. In the abbey, he marches up the stairs.
Damned little adventuress.
Eleanor! Eleanor!
Now! I said now!
Eleanor slips into Catherine's room in her nightgown.
Whatever can the matter be? Come. Sit down, you are not well.
She lends Eleanor her shawl.
Dear Catherine, I am well.
should I tell you? It's not concerning Henry.
No, no, not Henry. It is my father himself. My father has recollected an engagement that takes our whole family away on Monday. Explanation and apology are impossible.
My dear Eleanor, don't be so distressed. I'm not offended. I can be ready to leave on Monday.
No, that won't be possible. Oh, God. My father insists on your leaving immediately. As soon as you can make yourself ready. The carriage will take you to meet the public stagecoach. No servant will accompany you.
I'm to travel all night. Alone. Have I offended the general?
I have never seen him more angry.
Why, your brother must have been so angry with me. He told your father what I did. What I suspected. I deserve to be sent home in disgrace.
You are wrong. I know my father's reasons, and they do him no credit. To turn you out in the middle of the night, well, truly, I fear for your safety.
It's nothing.
But have you enough money to pay your way?
I never thought of that.
Well, there at least I can help you. Oh, Catherine, I am so sorry.
I deserve it. I deserve it all.
The general appears on a landing above the girls as they're saying goodbye. Eleanor leaves. Pale Catherine stares mutely up at the hard-faced general up on the landing, then turns and strides out. Alone, Catherine slumps in the Tilney's carriage as it races away from the abbey through the rain. The carriage rattles away, leaving her at a dark crossroads to pick up the public stagecoach. Her trunks are piled up beside her. She looks anxious. Several male passers-by eye a nervous Catherine, who hurries to grab her things as the public stagecoach trundles up in the shadows, drawn by four black horses. Catherine timidly clambers into the stagecoach, which is full of other passengers, and squeezes onto the end of the seat. Wrapped in a brown cloak with the hood pulled up, Catherine forlornly surveys her fellow passengers. Two rough-looking countrymen and a woman carrying a goose, who are squeezed on the opposite bench, staring back at her. One of the men swigs from a bottle. The fat man sitting next to Catherine offers her a bite of his sausage, but she demurs and leans against the side of the carriage, looking utterly dejected. Her final journey is made by local horse and trap, which drops Catherine off at the gateway to Moorland House. Her siblings are under a tree. Daddy! Walter and Lucy dash down the muddy drive and fling themselves at the weary Catherine. Two other sisters come running and the kids drag her towards the ivy-covered house. Her parents hug her. The Allens are in the drawing room.
Men can be very strange and sudden in their behaviour.
Well, we must live and learn. And the next new friends you make, I hope, will be better worth keeping than the ones you made at Bath.
No friend can be better worth keeping than Eleanor. And Mr. Tilney is not to blame.
Such a pleasant, agreeable young man, I thought him. He found us a chair, you know. And he understands muslin ever so well.
That's greatly to his credit, I'm sure. But has he written? Has he offered any kind of explanation?
No.
Well, I dare say there's no harm done in the end. You did very well to manage that journey all on your own, Catherine. You always used to be such a scatterbrained little creature. I'm quite proud of you.
Indeed, I'm not proud of myself.
Catherine's up in her bedroom unpacking. She finds her rather well-thumbed copy of Udolpho and flicks through its pages for a moment before slamming it shut and marching purposefully over to the fireplace to throw the book into the flames. Now she's in the children's bedroom. Her smaller siblings are in their nightgowns.
What was the Abbey like? Was it very scary? Were there ghosts?
It was very big and strange, with lots of empty rooms and secret passages. And I did think there might be ghosts, but there weren't any ghosts, really. People who read too many stories imagine all sorts of horrid things about ghosts and murders, and it is very wrong of them to do so, and it can get you into serious trouble. So let me not hear of any of you being so silly. Now, what else would you like to hear about?
What games did you play?
We played I Spy and charades. We went horse riding and got ourselves very muddy indeed.
Was Mr. Tilney very handsome, Cathy?
Yes, I think so. Very handsome and very kind and everything he should be.
Do you love Mr. Tilney, Cathy?
No, of course not. Don't talk such nonsense. Now, into your beds, all of you. That's it.
Two of her little brothers settle down in the same wooden bunk. Catherine looks troubled.
Night, Cathy.
Catherine blows out a candle and heads out of the bedroom, shutting the door behind her. It opens again and her little sister Lucy looks out.
What did you do to make them send you home, Cathy? Did you do something very naughty?
Come on, back into your bed.
Catherine goes back and gently shuts the door again. She's hurrying to the safety of her room when her mother comes up.
Cathy?
Catherine emerges from her room in tears.
What is it?
I did love him. I do love him. Now I shouldn't have seen him again and it's all my own fault.
They hug. A sunny day finds Catherine in a pretty grey dress in the garden behind a small hay barrow with her brothers.
Ten men went to the fen to get bed.
Very good.
Cathy! It's a man on a white horse.
Catherine stands up slowly as Henry rides up on his steed.
Go and tell Mama that Mr. Tilney is here.
Mr. Tilney?
Now! Go on, boys. In you go, quickly.
The kids run back into the house and Catherine gulps nervously as Henry strides up to the barrow.
I'm so ashamed of what I said, what I thought.
No. It's I who should apologise. There's nothing you have said or thought that could justify the way you have been treated.
But you were angry with me, and rightly so.
I was angry with you, but that is long past. Your imagination may be overactive, but your instinct was true. Our mother did suffer grievously and at the hands of our father. Do you remember I spoke of a kind of vampirism?
Yes.
Perhaps it was stupid to express it so, but we did watch him drain the life out of her with his coldness and his cruelty. He married her for her money, you see. She thought it was for love. It was a long time until she knew his heart was cold. No vampires, no blood. The worst crimes are the crimes of the heart.
But it was stupid and wicked of me to think such things as I did.
Harriet runs out.
Mama says, will you bring Mr. Tilney to the drawing room?
Looking rather ill at ease, Henry is sitting in the drawing room with Mrs. Morland, Catherine, and a lot of the little Morlands. He takes a sip of the drink he's been given and nods politely. Mrs. Morland gives him a smile. Henry glances over his shoulder at three of Catherine's siblings, who are sitting solemnly in a row watching him. He turns back, glances at Catherine, and gathers his courage.
Mrs. Morland, after what has happened, I have little right to expect a welcome at Fullerton.
You had no part in what happened, Mr. Tilney. And Catherine is as you see her. No harm done. Any friends of our children are welcome here. Shall we agree to say no more about it?
Very good.
Henry gulps down the rest of his drink and swallows hard.
Are Mr. and Mrs. Allen now at Fullerton?
They are, sir.
I should like to pay my respects. Perhaps Miss Morland might show me the way.
But you can see their house from the window.
Hush, Lucy.
I'm sure Catherine will be happy to show you Mr. Tilney.
The couple walk along a grassy lane.
He thought I was rich.
It was Thorpe who misled him at first. Thorpe who hoped to marry you himself. He thought you were Mr. Allen's heiress, and he exaggerated Mr. Allen's wealth to my father. You were only guilty of not being as rich as you were supposed to be. For that, he turned you out of the house.
I thought you were so angry with me you told him what you knew, which would have justified any discourtesy.
No. The discourtesy was all his. I've broken with my father, Catherine. I may never speak to him again.
What did he say to you?
Let me instead tell you what I said to him. I told him that I felt myself bound to you. By honour, by affection, and by a love so strong that nothing he could do could deter me from...
From what?
Before I go on, I should tell you, there's a pretty good chance he'll disinherit me. I fear I may never be a rich man, Catherine.
Please, go on with what you were going to say.
Will you marry me, Catherine?
Yes. Yes, I will. Yes.
A passionate kiss on the lips.
In perfect happiness of the respective ages of 26 and 18 is to do pretty well. Catherine and Henry were married, and in due course, the joys of wedding gave way to the blessings of a christening. The bells rang and everyone smiled. No one more so than Eleanor, whose beloved's unexpected accession to title and fortune finally allowed them to marry. I leave it to be settled whether the tendency of this story be to recommend parental tyranny or reward filial disobedience.
Lightning flashes over Northanger Abbey. ITFC audio description by Lonnie Evans.